from her, you bitch!
Great kid! Don't get cocky!
That still only counts as one!
Okay, you people sit tight, hold the fort, and keep the home fires burning. If we're not back by dawn, call the president.
Groovy.
Hello, and welcome to Good Foreign Action Movie. I'm Max Steele.
And I'm Will Thornton.
And today we're super excited to talk about the recently released Incredibles 2, a movie 14 years in the making.
Yes, they have been long awaiting the vocal work of Craig T. Nelson. He's just a perfectionist. It just takes him forever. We can edit that joke out later.
I think the funniest thing about it being 14 years in the making is that they had to add the feature that is like 30 seconds that comes before the movie that literally talks about, we know that it was 14 years long. We're very sorry. And that pause was actually what I liked a lot about the movie, is that they included the feature at the beginning that was like 30 seconds about like, hey, we know this is a long time to wait for a movie. We're sorry, but like, here it is. And Samuel L. Jackson said it, so I felt pretty comforted.
Hopefully that aired everywhere because it was nice. It got me excited for the movie.
All right, and I think a good place to begin with the podcast is discussing kind of our impressions of the original Incredibles. So Incredibles was actually one of the movies that I was probably obsessed with for a pretty long time. I remember when I started getting really into like storytelling media that I thought that the Incredibles was really, really cool because of the personal journeys of all of its characters. Everyone was such a colorful character. Everyone was doing their own thing, and it all kind of culminated in this grandiose plot of Jason Lee kidnapping the, I know it wasn't actually Jason Lee, but it was his character. I like to imagine it's just Jason Lee or Earl, for My Name is Earl. Kidnapping them and the other things that happened with Syndrome. So that's really what I remember about it. And also just being really heartfelt and, you know, a true Pixar movie.
Yeah. It's interesting because I think that for me, The Incredibles is probably one of the Pixar movies that I have actually seen the least. It's not that I don't think it's a great movie, but for whatever reason, it was not one. Perhaps it was like most related to the age I was when it came out, where I was not young enough to binge it like I did with something like Toy Story 2 or A Bug's Life, but I wasn't old enough that even if I've only seen it two or three times, I really remember it really well, and that would be maybe something like Toy Story 3, which I've probably only seen four times, but you know, I can remember it much better because I was so much older when I saw it. But I definitely have a lot of respect for The Incredibles as a movie, and I've seen it recently enough that I, you know, could evaluate it as an adult, and I do think it's a phenomenal movie. I think Brad Bird is one of the most talented filmmakers working today. He's produced so many incredible films, and he's just a great artist, and Pixar is so lucky to have gotten his talents. I saw a thing online where across Pixar's however many movies they've released now, like 17 maybe, I don't know, he has done the only two that are written and directed by just one person. Pixar is such a company based on collaboration and the idea of the writer's room and the creator's room and everyone bouncing ideas off each other and perfecting this vision. But Brad Bird's movies are so singular. Not all of his movies are. Ratatouille was shared some credits, but the Incredibles movies are really his vision, and he's a phenomenal filmmaker.
And I think that leads into what I think is both I'm still kind of unsure how I feel about this in terms of like how the sequel relates to the original. I think one of the cool things and then one of the not cool things about Incredibles 2, also it's just called Incredibles 2, it's not called The Incredibles 2, which I thought was interesting as well, is that in the time of the story world, no time passes between either of the movies. And I like that because I felt like a lot of movies that have a long-awaited sequel have a lot of fan service in them. Like there are a lot of forced big moments. And if this movie was one of those movies, the moment that Enemal is introduced would have been like, oh, who's it gonna be? Oh, they're teasing us. And then it's her. And then everyone in the audience cheers because it's the opening weekend and people cheer in movies for some reason. But in this movie, it's like, no, the characters are just existing right from their previous lives of the first movie. And I really enjoyed that. But the other part of that for me was like, Well, shouldn't it kind of be a big grandiose like return to the screen because it was 14 years that it took to make this movie? So those are basically my two big things in terms of my overall impressions. I really like how it is basically a continuation of the story, literally happening right after the events of the first movie. And I like how they connect the two in the opening scene, kind of the pre-credit scenes, kind of a cold open like. But I didn't want more, but I felt like it might have, it left me wondering, like, why did it take 14 years to make this movie?
Yeah, I agree with some of that, but I really think a lot of the movie's biggest strengths come from the idea that it picks up right where it leaves off. And you touched on that. I think the opening, I love the fact that it has a traditional, like, opening gambit, something you would see in, like, a Bond movie, where the underminer who was presented right at the end of the last movie as just sort of this throwaway gag to sort of imply, and now this family, you know, is going to band together again and they know how to take down a supervillain. And I was looking forward to seeing the continuation of that as this fun little thing. And if there is ever an Incredibles 3, you better believe that the underminer will be back because he's voiced by John Ratzenberger, of course. But I think it's a noticeable contrast with the Toy Story movies, which do have gaps in their timeline, comparable to the gap between the movies released in the real world. You know, Andy's a few years older in Toy Story 2, and then he's like 10 years older in Toy Story 3. And I think that Brad Bird perhaps wanted to go in a different direction with that and pick up right where they left off. Or if you approach it from the idea of the superhero comic book, which the next installment of a superhero story, typically, you know, we just talked about the Marvel movies and how it would be very out of place if, like, the next Iron Man was, like, 10 years later. Like, we want to see the stuff that has taken place right after the most recent MCU movie. So I think it was an interesting choice, and I think they really pulled off just creating that seamless transition into this. And despite the fact that they were made 14 years apart with, like, what are surely drastically different filmmaking techniques and computer technologies, I think viewing them back-to-back would be a really seamless experience, which is really cool and very impressive.
Yes, I'm going to agree with that. And it's not like a problem that I have with the movie that it's like, why did it take 14 years to make? It was just something that came to my mind. I think that it really does transition well. And then as it itself is a really good movie on par with The Incredibles, even though I probably like the first Incredibles better just because it's the original Incredibles. One thing that I do think is interesting, what is the kid's name at the beginning? He's kind of in the opening when he's Violet's love interest.
I think it's Tony.
Tony. Okay. Here's my idea, and I'm going to pitch this over the airwaves. So my idea is that at the beginning of every Incredibles movie, Tony loses his memory, and the entire movie goes through the same cycle of Violet trying to convince Tony that they have some sort of relationship. I want every Incredibles movie to include that.
That would be a really good bit. Brad Bird, I'm sure you're a listener. Note it down, my man. I wanted to talk a little bit about the overall story and where the characters sort of slot into place before we talk about the action on this action movie podcast. Obviously, one of the most interesting things about Incredibles 2, and just a quick note, we always do this, and we know this is a new movie. We're going to try to not give away any big plot details, but if you haven't seen the movie, go out and see it. I think we would both agree it's a very good movie. If you're really a spoiler-conscious person, don't listen to this episode until you've seen the movie. All that being said, Mr. Incredible's role in this movie and Elastigirl, Helen's role in this movie, are both very interesting, and I love the decision to sort of, for lack of a better word, domesticate Mr. Incredible and put him in the sort of a Mr. Mom role. Mr. Mom will be my recommendation at the end of this podcast if you're looking for other movies where a guy has to watch the kids. But I love that. I love how his entire character arc is essentially ignoring the fact that he's a superhero. And that is what The Incredibles got so much credit for, was humanizing these superhero characters and focusing more on their relationships in their marriage and to their children. But in this movie, it's specifically his relationship as a father and as a provider for his family. And that's just the newest thing in a long string of Pixar films which tackle really mature themes in an incredibly fun and child-friendly way. But I loved how they handled that in this movie. Some of the funniest scenes are him dealing with just the chaos at home and the development of Jack-Jack's powers and Violet and her boy problems and Dash and his homework and him at school. So funny. Those scenes were equally as like exciting and riveting as the action scenes with Elastigirl. And I loved it. What did you think about that sort of half of the movie, the less action-y parts, Max?
I enjoyed it very much as well. The thing I liked about it is that not only is Mr. Incredible put in this domestic setting, but he's also successful at different points. It's not like, oh no, he's in this situation and everything's going wrong. And he, well, at the end, it's kind of decided that everyone needs each other and that when Helen comes back, they're a lot more successful together. But he's successful on his own. It's not like he is helpless while she is out pursuing her dream of, you know, being a famous superhero as Elastigirl. So I really enjoyed that part. That it's not kind of like the stereotypical man in the house where he is completely unsuccessful and everything goes to hell, but that he both has successes and failures, which is more realistic than the usual portrayal as well. So that is a part that I enjoyed as well, with probably my favorite line in the movie, when they're talking about math. You can't change math.
Yeah, it was good. A lot of those scenes are so, so funny. There's the one scene in particular that it's just so much of the staging of it is really well. Like, this movie has great physical comedy bits. A lot of the stuff with Jack-Jack and the stuff going on at home, in addition to just really well-coordinated action sequences, the comedy sequences are really well-coordinated too. When he's talking on the phone to Helen and he's going through each of the kids and we see them all in the background and just the hell that is broken loose at the house as he's describing how everything is fine. That was like probably the biggest laugh in the theater, and there's no like specific line of dialogue that's funny. It's just really well done physical visual comedy. Should we move on and talk about the action? Do you have anything else you want to talk about the story-wise?
Story-wise, I really enjoyed some of the other things that they did. I really liked the focus on Elastigirl a lot because I thought that she was an underrated character. There's a lot of her in the first movie, but they did a lot of really cool stuff, kind of making her the star of the show for the majority of the movie. Then I also, once again, spoilers here, I also enjoyed that Bob Odenkirk was not the villain of the entire movie and that it was his sister played by, her name is escaping me.
Catherine Keener. Yeah, Bob Odenkirk's character, like when he first came in, I was like, oh, that's Bob Odenkirk. And then his sister comes in, I'm like, and then it's one of those movies where I spent the entire movie going, who is that? And then at the end, when I saw that it was Catherine Keener, I'm like, oh, I know who that is, but I would never recognize her voice. But yeah, I actually, and this is slightly spoilery, so once again, but I actually think the only weakness of the movie to me is that the villain was one of those two characters. I thought that that was just the incredibly obvious thing to do. It wasn't Bob Odenkirk, who I guess would be the most obvious choice. But then you get into this guessing game where you go, well, it's not going to be the most obvious character, so it's probably the sister. So I just sort of was watching the movie. I'm like, nah, this will probably be smarter than the average movie, so it's not going to be either of them. Who's it going to be? Is it going to be this ambassador character, any of these other sort of minor characters that would have been a lot more shocking? And then when it did turn out to be Catherine Keener's character, I was a little disappointed in just the overall story there. That's really a nitpick because I think the movie is so fun and so strong in so many other levels. And the ultimate like reveal of like who was the screen slaver, it's really not that important in why you would enjoy this movie, except for the technophobic messaging, which you know we hate on this here electronic internet radio show. No screens involved, though. Here, you can just put the phone in your pocket, folks.
Yes, you are safe with our podcast here. And I'm trying to think, it's actually funny that you say that with Catherine Keener, that my experience with Bob Odenkirk was the same, because I love Bob Odenkirk. Like, I've watched Mr. Show, Better Call Saul, Breaking Bad, but for some reason I could not recognize that that was him throughout the entire movie until it got right to the end. I was like, oh, it's Bob Odenkirk. So that's pretty funny that way. Experiences with two opposite characters. But yeah, that reveal doesn't really ruin the movie. It doesn't also – the whole movie doesn't really hinge on that plot necessarily. The Incredibles – both movies are incredibly character-driven, and the plot's kind of secondary, even though I felt like Incredibles 2 had a much more complicated plot than the first one. I thought the first one was more character focused, with kind of the thread of, you know, Syndrome inviting people to an island and defeating stuff. So those are the thoughts that I have. I think we should move on to action now, since this is called Good for a Family Movie, action movie. And I think we can, I don't know if we can both agree on this, but the an action sequence I didn't know that I need would be a small child fighting a woodland creature. That is the sequence that I've always wanted but didn't always know that I needed.
Yeah, oh man, that Jack-Jack raccoon sequence is so good. It's so well done. It is so funny, and the way that it is shot is great, and that had the theater that I was in. I was in like a really full theater, and which I don't love, because the guy right next to me was on his phone the entire movie. Sorry, I'll cut that out. If you're listening out there, man, cut it out. I'll edit that out. Yeah, the theater was super full, and everyone was, it was riotous laughter at that. Outside of that Jack-Jack sequence, the stuff with Elastigirl is great. I love the bike chase. I love the movie's reliance on like superhero cliches, and they do them in such a fun way. Like, they're trying to set up Elastigirl to solve some big crime, so they send her to like the quote-unquote bad neighborhood, and the crime is like, someone's going to tamper with the hover rail demonstration. I was waiting for Lyle Landley to appear at the dedication of the monorail. Monorail. And that was great. Her on the motorbike, and it like disassembles and does a little slinky dog, was awesome. And the whole ending fight scene on the boat was great. My personal favorite line of the movie, which I've been just thinking about and laughing, was you want me to uncrush? So funny. That's such a great like Pixar style joke of just taking this like Crusher character, and just, he's literally, no one even knows his name. And, oh, it's so funny. I still think that is hilarious. It's a very, like, kind of Toy Story-ish style joke, because you have all these, like, one-bit characters come in who are these other superheroes, and they manage to do something funny with all their special powers in the much the same way that, like, the early Toy Story movies deal a lot with, like, one-off jokes about, like, certain toys and stuff. Yeah. What did you think about the other action sequences, Max?
I enjoyed a lot of this stuff. I even, one of the things I really enjoyed was the fight when Elastigirl goes, she's investigating the one site of the screenslaver, and she thinks she's found him right before the pizza guy gets arrested for taking the fall for that. And it's with all the bright flashing lights. I don't know if, once again, we said that we saw this in different theaters. I don't know if your ticket booth had a warning for The Incredibles 2 on it about flashing lights.
They did not, and I've actually seen a couple people online complain about that, that not all the theaters have warned about the potential to trigger epilepsy. So, you know, possibly could have done that better.
Regardless, I like that part a lot. I don't know, that's just something that I've never really seen before, and it's kind of like, it almost felt like strobe lighty fight, like a John Wick type of fight, if you may, that was happening in a very close quarters, and it felt realistic, even though it was just this kind of, we later find out it's just some wimpy pizza guy and then a full-fledged superhero. But it really makes sense within the logic of the scene with all the bright lights and then the close quarters, and that's a part that I really like. But I also enjoyed all the different points that you were speaking about as well. So good action, I would say, in this movie.
Yeah, I think the lighting fight is a perfect example of something that Pixar has become able to do. I don't know the first thing about computer animation, but I've watched a lot of Pixar behind the scenes footage, and it is my understanding that lighting is one of the most difficult things to nail with a computer animated movie, and that, which is why in their earlier movies they focused on very simple things to light, like toys and bugs, and in later movies they can do so much more. And I got to imagine that strobe light effect is such a complicated lighting scene to pull off, and it possibly could not have been done in the first Incredibles movie. So that's just a perfect example of the way that technology has changed and allowed more creative, it has allowed Brad Bird to show more of his creative ideas and things like that. And yeah, it was great. It was very cool. And perhaps they could have had a more clear warning to people in the crowd. But I did like the scene as well.
While you were talking about the inclusion of the other superheroes, that's another thing that I enjoyed as well, because I thought that in the first Incredibles movie, we were promised this world of people who were superheroes but forced into retirement, somewhat like a Watchmen type situation. But we don't really get like something in Watchmen where we get to see a lot of those different characters. But in this movie, you get to meet a lot of them who are eventually, you know, taken advantage of by the screenslaver. But you really get to, you really start to feel that there is a bigger world of superheroes out there, which is something that I don't think I really got out of the first one. But that's not really a big part of the first one.
Yeah, it was a great world-building step to introduce new heroes. I look forward to Incredibles 3 when Frozone, fed up with the world, retires to Mars for most of the story.
I can't wait for my Reflux spinoff. that is the one thing that I really enjoyed. That, like, going back to the Crusher and the Uncrushed joke, I thought the reveal of Reflux's powers was really funny, too, going back to that. But, yeah, I think that's a lot of the stuff. Do you have anything else to talk about in terms of Incredibles 2?
No, we hit all my notes. A bit of a shorter episode, but we had a long one last week, so I'm cool to call it there and move on to ratings and recs if you want.
I'd be down.
Okay, I can get started. I can give my rating. So I would give this movie probably 3.5 stars. I don't think it's like a perfect movie or anything like that, but it is so good. It is so much fun. It is hilarious. The action's great. The story is really solid. Like I said, I quibble with like the villain reveal and stuff like that, but I'm kind of a curmudgeon, so don't listen to me. It's so much fun. I think it's a top-tier Pixar flick. It is a great animated movie. You know, I was thinking this is a big episode for us. It is our first animated movie that we've ever talked about, which is very cool. Not a lot of animated movies are classified as action, and this is one of the only ones that is unabashedly an action movie. Like, it's not sort of like a fluke that it's called action. It is through and through a traditional action movie, just that happens to be computer animated and with such a strong character focus. That gets into sort of Pixar-y stuff. But yeah, 3.5 stars. I loved it. And I guess I'm going to do my action rating. I will give this 7.5 crushers out of 10. You do a much better job with your out of 10 ratings. But yeah, I think it's great. And I give it a 7.5.
All right, and for my ratings, I'm going to give this movie 3 out of 4 stars. I enjoy it a lot, and 3 is by no means like a bad rating for me. I think it's a lot of fun, but it's obviously not as good as the first Incredibles, at least in my personal opinion. I can see why a lot of people could like it even more. And then for my action movie rating, I really like the action, so I'm going to give this 8 out of 10 violet squirting water out of her nose.
That was a really good scene. Another huge laugh in the theater. The animation on that was so good. The look on her face. Props to whoever animated that scene. Moving on to recommendations. I have 2 recommendations. I have one movie that I just watched last night. I rewatched it, and it holds up super well. It's a great film. It is Alexander Payne's 1999 movie, Election, which I love. And I watched it again, and it's just such a good movie. If you haven't seen it, check it out. It's streaming, I think, on Amazon Prime is where I watched it. If you have seen it before, revisit it. It's great. It's funny. It's heartwarming. The character of Paul Metzler, played by Chris Klein, is possibly one of the funniest movie characters of the past, 100 years. He is so funny. So many of the scenes of that movie, we were rewinding to watch multiple times because they are so good. And then the other movie I wanted to recommend is, I can't believe I did not recommend this in the first episode when we sort of came back this year, because ever since I saw this, I thought this is a great movie to recommend on Good for an Action Movie. And this is a movie I watched with a bunch of friends late at night, and it is called Boa versus Python, and it is on Amazon Prime as well. And I know what you're saying, those sci-fi original movies are stupid. Well, this is not a sci-fi original movie. It's older than those, but it is one of the best bad movies I've ever seen. It is so much fun to watch. I'm recommending it next time you have a bunch of friends over and you want to watch something that is stupid but so funny, and just everything in it is ridiculous and turned up to the nines. Watch Boa versus Python. It's so incredible, and more people need to see this because it has to be seen to be believed, and it's really, really funny. Max?
My money's on Boa. So for my recommendation, and first of all, Retweet to Election. That's a very good movie. I like that a lot. Very funny as well. Is going to be kind of relating to the Pixar universe, because a frequenter in the Pixar universe, John Ratzenberger, is in this TV show that I would like to recommend, which is Cheers. Cheers is a wonderful, wonderful TV show that I just started watching. I was honestly just so surprised. I think sitcoms get a really bad rap, especially now, because a lot of it, admittedly, are multicam shows with an audio or a studio audience are very, very bad right now. But Cheers is very, very funny. I like all the characters. Ted Danson, possibly the most pleasant man in the world, is our leading man. And John Ratzenberger isn't even a big part of it. He's just a regular in the bar, and he has maybe one line an episode. And it's always usually pretty funny line. But I would definitely check it out if you're looking to watch a series that is 11 seasons long but is not too deep of a watch, but also will make you laugh and, you know, make you feel stuff along the way. I think Cheers is a really good option. I'm starting to really, really get into that show. And, you know, sometimes you just got to go someplace where everybody knows your name.
Stay tuned in a couple episodes when Max starts watching Roseanne. Topical.
Well, I think eventually the next step is Frasier.
Also, fun fact, John Ratzenberger is one of the rebel officers in Empire Strikes Back. He has a few lines of dialogue, but he's not using his sort of characteristic voice.
Darth Vader hit our kung fu. How about pork chop?
That's my favorite line from Cheers. Okay, I think that about wraps it up for us.
Oh, wait, Will. I actually have an idea for a post-credit scene, so maybe I can hint for a post-credit scene. Okay, is that good?
Yeah, go ahead and hint away.
There is a very not controversial short before the movie, but people have a lot of opinions about it. So I think maybe we should talk a little bit about it in our post-credit scene. So after our closing credits go by, stick around for that short talk.
Ooh, I'm super down. See you after the credits, everyone.
That's it, man. Game over, man. Game over.
It's over.
Nothing is over!
Nothing is over until we decide it is.
It's over. Go home.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Let's talk about Bao.
I liked it so much. I don't know why there is like all this like discussion about like it being confusing. It's a very clear metaphor. People just don't understand storytelling anymore, and it makes me furious.
I completely agree. I think it's a great short. It's so in line with so many other Pixar shorts, and the power, like that powerful idea of a mother who is so, or forget about mother, a parent who is so protective and of their child that you are willing to do anything possible to keep them from leaving you. That's such a poignant message. And people who freak out about this stuff, you know, people think it's weird. The personification of food, that is literally so common in American media, of the personification of all food. It happens constantly. Look at, like, children's movies are full of talking food. Probably the third most talking thing after animals and trucks.
Yeah, so that's just something that I have to go, like, because, oh my, it just makes me so, so, so mad. And it's a formula that's been used in, like, shorts before. No, I'm not going to say, like, this is an unoriginal thing. It's very, very original, especially in the way that it's done. I think it's done very cleverly. But, like, this, like, the formula of like parallel stories of something inanimate that comes to life is not a new concept, so people need to get over themselves.
Yeah, shout out to Domi Shi, who directed the short. I saw some stuff online. She was an intern at Pixar like 7 or 8 years ago and has just worked her way up and got to direct a short film, and I think it's wonderful. It's much better than the short that aired before Coco, which was that stupid Frozen thing. So I'll take an original story any day.
I think Coco is going to become my new Captain America the Winter Soldier, because I still have not seen that, and I'm going to probably keep talking about it on the podcast until I see it in Germany.